are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, you are. The day after Easter and the Passover holidays throughout
Easter
the
has passed over.
It is. Yes. Yeah, combining the two.
Yes.
Combining the two. Yeah.
And
this
you are?
Michael, I think. Yes. I'm Michael Sterling.
You're Michael Sterling. I am Paul Strolley. Welcome to State of the Arts. We're delighted to have you with us today.
Indeed we are.
Yeah. I am, anyway.
Well, I couldn't speak more highly of you, Paul.
We'd like
than
to
you, perhaps, yourself.
Oh, I can. I've prepared this slideshow. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
And we are joined by two guests today, one in studio and one through the amazing electric telephone. In a few moments, we'll be talking to a singer and actress who was the fourth place finalist on the third season of American Idol. She released her debut album, Love and Life, in September 2005, and will join us to chat about her current role in Celebration Theater's production. Celebration does great work, by the way.
Yes, they do.
Celebration Theater's production of The Color Purple, LaToya London, will join us shortly.
Nice. And also, Paul, joining us in studio.
Yes.
His film and TV credits include Urban Cowboy, NYPD Blue, Criminal Minds, Cold Case, and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, just to name a few. Recently, he appeared as Gus, the werewolf, on HBO's smash hit series True Blood. Here to talk about his current project, the world premiere of Slow Dance in Midtown, please welcome Mr. Don Swayze.
Don! How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming. We're delighted to have
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Excited to talk
Absolutely.
About that.
As we said earlier, precious day off. We know that. Mondays, you've just come off of Tech Week opening over the weekend. And
He just opened a show on Friday,
yes.
And he's here on Monday. That's a committed
that
guy.
That is a committed
and
actor.
You said you fit in a three-hour, what was it, a bike ride?
Bicycle ride, yeah. I'm an avid cyclist, so it was nice yesterday to take my Easter vacation and disappear up in the mountains on my bicycle.
So that was your day off relaxation
Do you have, being that you were in the mountains, do you have a mountain bike?
I have four mountain bikes. I have a road bike that I do a lot of training on. But yesterday I was on my mountain bike, my carbon fiber lightweight.
Oh wow,
that is nice.
So
that
you're
is
like,
nice.
And you do, and if I remember from your bio, you skydive too.
I'm an avid skydiver. Yeah, I've been skydiving. I did my first jump in 1989.
Oh my gosh!
Just fell in love with it. Went through the entire course in 6 days and bought my own gear. And 11 months later, I was on the California state record attempts where we linked up 110 people in free fall.
So oh my gosh!
A 6 day course.
There's
8 levels that you must go through, and many times people have, you know, if you take 3 weeks in between, you can find yourself having to repeat one. I went through it so quickly that I think it's actually better.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
retain everything.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not a sport you want to have any.
A little bit of a daredevil.
You might look at it like that. I grew up in a dance family, and
right.
we had gymnastic equipment, 2 trampolines,
right.
and so in my family, it wasn't about whether we should be doing it. It was about good form. So my mom, instead of saying, "Get down, honey, you're going to break your neck," all we heard was, "That's good, honey, but back straight, point your toes."
So you're saying that as a skydiver, you have better form coming down.
Absolutely.
Than just about anything.
Well, you know, they say that the girls and tall, skinny guys make the best skydivers. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. You know, some of these, you know, guys built, stockier guys want to bring their football and their macho mentality, when it's actually a sport where flying like a little bird is better. So,
really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's
nice.
Why I'm going to do it, because I often have been accused of flying like a little bird.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to do it. The thing is that I'm heroically afraid of heights, but I don't... I don't think I would have an issue with it, because everyone says that there's really no sense of height because you have nothing around you for perspective.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
What most people are afraid of is that vertigo. It's like when you're standing on a building and it seems, you know, and a cloud goes by in your peripheral, and it does make you seem, it's unnerving.
Yeah.
But it's so wide open and with such blue sky around, it feels like you're flying on a wind that seems to be blowing up from the earth.
Right. Yeah. No, I've always been fascinated by that.
Wow. Well,
because I mean, people statistically, what I like to do is more dangerous than that. I mean, I ride a motorcycle in Los Angeles. Infinitely more dangerous.
Absolutely.
Than skydiving. You know?
And statistically, I'm safer at the drop zone than I was driving there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. We should do that, Michael, for our 100th episode. We'll
really?
Both jump out of a plane.
Wow. Well, he had a far more interesting holiday, perhaps, than I did. How was yours?
Mine was good. You know, we just had some people over, did a very casual Easter thing. How about you?
Yeah, I had an odd situation occur.
Which was?
Right before Easter, actually. I was buying an Easter greeting card for a dear friend, and... she likes kind of, you know, flashy things. So this particular Easter card had a border of beautiful glitter around it, and then a fun kind of Easter message. And I was buying it, and then I was addressing it in my car, and then going to the post office all within 15 minutes, right? Because
all right.
The post office was closing. So I'm very fast at doing this. You know, I get it all done. I get to the post office. I get home. A couple hours later, I'm watching the television, and I notice every time I turn that there are bolts of light that are, you know, streaming past my left eye. When I would turn, you know, a shimmer of light would shoot across my eye like a shooting star.
Right.
That type of thing. And it was really starting to get on my nerves. And I went to the bathroom, and I looked in the mirror, and I'm trying to open my eye. What's in there? Nothing. I'm like washing my eye. Nothing. And it still persists. And it finally dawned on me when I went to bed. I was thinking about it. I thought, it's the damn glitter. I have gotten glitter in my eye.
You have glitter in your eye.
Underneath.
Right.
You know, that was just kind of floating around. And when it would catch light, it would, you know.
So your eyes don't naturally generate glitter?
I know they're beautiful, Paul, but, you know, yeah, not that pretty. But I think it's still there, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I can't tell, because once again, they're just so dazzling that they could be glitter-laden, and I would not know
Wow.
I would not know it.
It was the highlight of my Easter. That's an unfortunate
statement. I was just going to say, if that's the highlight of your Easter, it's kind of tragic, Michael.
A lot of time spent looking at that. Makes you kind of crazy. But, yeah, I have barbecue ham. We barbecued ham.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was nice.
We had ham, too.
Made potato salad, my famous potato salad.
And, really? Yeah. And you didn't bring any leftovers?
I did not.
For Don and I?
And you know, somebody sent me a big box of See's candy, which now, how long has it been since you've had See's candy?
Oh, yeah. No, my mother always gets it when she comes to town.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And Bordeaux's are my favorite, right? You know what they are? The ones with the little sprinkles?
Yeah, with the sprinkles.
And this person remembered that I had made that remark some years ago and sent this in the mail to me. A big box of all Bordeaux.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's...
Which, you know, See's candy is not cheap. So
no,
it's a very generous gift.
I just found out recently that the I Love Lucy episode with the conveyor belt and all that was because the original Desilu Studios, Desi Arnaz got a tour through See's Candies where they were assembling it, and that's how he got the idea for them to write the episode with Lucy working on the chocolate.
And I bet you I know where that was. That was on La Cienega. You know, that's their main... plant there in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Los Angeles.
So let's, should we call our first guest and get to action?
I'm so excited to speak to her.
Why don't you give her the intro she is due, and I will try to connect with her on this computer, and if I don't, we'll have more time with Don.
That's right.
Time for the guys. Sick of me by the time it's
after wowing, ladies and gentlemen, the judges on American Idol, our first guest, who Paul is reaching via telephone, played the role of Nettie in the national tour of The Color Purple, but is taking on the sultry role of Shug Avery in the Celebration Theater's acclaimed reimagining of the piece, being staged in an intimate production at their theater in Hollywood through May 26th. So, Paul?
We're hopefully going to welcome LaToya London shortly. We're calling her right now. We'll see if we connect with her. This is the joy of internet radio.
It is.
No screeners. Just hit the ground running.
That's right.
We'll see if she's there to pick up.
I don't know. Five rings.
We're probably going to get her message.
Please leave a message at the tone, a detailed message, that is, and your phone number, and I will get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you.
Let's leave a message.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, yes. You may hang up or press 1 for more options.
LaToya London, this is Paul Strolley from State of the Arts, along with Michael Sterling. We're looking forward to talking to you today. We're actually on the air right now, recording a lovely message on your answering machine there. Answering machine, boy, I just dated myself,
really?
Didn't I?
Yeah.
Call us back here in the studio so we can talk about you and the color purple. 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. Give us a call and we'll talk about your show. Looking forward to it. Bye now. Okay, so we'll see if she calls us back.
Well, I hope so. She had a class today, and that was the reason that she was being called anyway, so perhaps class ran late. I don't know. Let's see if she calls it. But in the interim,
let me give Don the intro he is due. Our next guest was last seen on stage with Academy Award nominee Anne Archer in the play Jane Fonda and the Court of Public Opinion, where he played the role of Army Sergeant Don Simpson, a wounded veteran of the Vietnam War. He's currently in the world premiere of Slow Dance in Midtown, which opened this past Friday, as Michael said, at the White Fire Theater in Sherman Oaks. Please welcome Don Swayze.
Back with us. Welcome, sir. What a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Great to be here.
Don, I just wanted to say that we've unintentionally been following one another around. I mentioned this to you before the show, that you are now at the White Fire Theater, and I am performing at the Edgemar Center Theater.
And I just wrapped up a show there that we did in the fall.
Right. So. And then when you were at the Edgemar, I was at the White Fire at Sherman Oaks. So it's like, just let me know what you're doing next,
okay,
so I can plan my schedule around.
What
yes.
you're doing. Both so, beautiful theaters here for L.A.
And they do great stuff. And I would be remiss if I... you know what? We have to go back.
Going?
Of course she's calling now. We got to go back to Don.
Of course.
All right. So we'll answer it. We'll see. Hello, LaToya. Is that you?
Hi,
LaToya, you're on the air, so don't, we just didn't mean to throw you. We called you a little earlier, but we wanted to at least grab a couple of minutes. We're talking to Don Swayze and you today, and we wanted to chat with you about the color purple at the celebration.
Sure,
and,
it's going down.
My first question for you, Michael is here too, I'm sorry.
Yes, this is Michael Sterling, LaToya, the co-host of
Hi.
State of the Arts. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Thank you for joining us on a Monday, too. We know you have a school conflict, and that's why you're not with us in studio. But tell us about what's going on with The Color Purple. We understand it is a phenomenal production of it at the Celebration Theater.
Oh, my gosh. It's very intimate, which is quite different than the Broadway production. I mean, it's the same show. It's the same everything, music, script, and, of course, a different cast, but in a different director. However, it is the same spirit, you know, and it's done in a much smaller theater. It's more intimate, and it's, I'm telling you, it's a tremendous experience. I mean, you feel like you are in The Color Purple with us. It's really beautiful. It's so touching. I mean, there's not a dry eye in the audience. There's not a dry face in the audience. I mean, everyone's laughing and just going along the journey along with us, you know?
LaToya, I wanted to ask you, because obviously it's significantly different, like you said, from the original, from what you had done in the national tour. But the other thing is it's a distinctly different role for you in this as well, correct?
Yeah. So yes, I mean, it's not as grand as the Broadway production, but it is. You know what I mean? It's just intimate. It's a more intimate experience.
It's grand.
But the
it's
same
right.
Spirit, like I said. And for me, yeah, I played Nettie on the national tour, and now I'm playing Suge, which is like total opposite as far as personalities. You know, Suge is just, she is just a siren. I mean, she does what she wants when she wants. She doesn't, she doesn't apologize for who she is. And it's significant for Seeley because that's kind of, you know, what Seeley needs, you know, in her life. I mean, she's just this person that has been torn down, you know, and has such low self-esteem, and here comes Suge Avery showing her how to give her permission, herself permission to be free and to love herself within.
Yeah, that is so beautiful. You know, I have a an experience to share with you. I was very close to this production for a couple of years before it came to fruition on Broadway because I am a good friend of Allie Willis.
Oh, I love Allie.
Lovely Allie Willis, who has been with us on radio on our show before and talked about her amazing career in music and her amazing experience with this show. But I would get to hear, I was privileged to hear at Allie's home in her studio as all of these pieces of music were being written with Brenda and Stephen. And I would hear them in their initial stages and then their kind of middle stages and as they were getting near completion and before Alice Walker was coming in to hear them. And I said to Allie, I said, you know that you're going to be standing. This is a woman from the pop world, Don, of music that was writing this and great hits in the pop world. But I said, when this show opens, you're going to be standing at some point thereafter on the stage of the Tony Awards, hopefully winning the Tony Award and certainly being nominated. Your whole life is going to change through this process. And she said, really, do you really think that's possible? I said, good Lord, yes. And it was so exciting to actually, for 2 years, go over every month or two and hear this music in progress. So what I saw when it premiered here in Los Angeles was breathtaking. And as I said earlier, your production at the Celebration is being touted as being a must-see before it closes. So I'm thrilled that you're doing this and that The Color Purple is once again appearing in Los Angeles and being introduced to, you know, perhaps an entirely different audience that couldn't afford to go see it at the Amundsen Theater.
Yeah, it's definitely affordable. And like I said, the experience is just unforgettable. It's just so touching. And for some, it's life-changing, you know. So I definitely encourage everyone, you know, to come, bring someone, if you want to, you know, share this experience with someone, come out before it's over.
And
you know?
I'm going to tell them exactly how to do that. Performances are Thursday, Friday, and Saturdays
yes.
at 8, Sundays at
Thursday.
3. I'm sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
Yes, Thursday through Saturday at 8, Sunday matinee at 3 p.m.
Right.
At the Celebration Theater. It's on Santa Monica. Cross Street is La Brea. And I believe they can go to celebrationtheater.com.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. celebrationtheater.com. And theater is spelled R-E. And also the phone number is 323-957-1884. And but once again, celebrationtheater.com, theater R-E.
Yes.
And what a lovely opportunity to talk to you, LaToya. Thank you for fitting us in today. And
absolutely.
Thank you for pointing out what you did, which is this is an astounding opportunity for people to see a musical of this magnitude in an intimate setting, which is not something you get to do very often. And people should really
not at all.
Yeah.
Yep.
No,
definitely should experience it. The music's beautiful. The script is beautiful. I mean, how they decorated the theater to make you feel like you were there in that time period is beautiful. I mean, it is a must see, I will say.
LaToya, it's Michael Sterling. I wanted to ask you one other question before we let you go. Outside of The Color Purple, because it is American Idol time on television, and we also have another friend in common, Michael Orland. And
yes.
Dear Michael Orland, and are you watching Idol?
You know, I'm not watching this season, unfortunately. I really wish I was. But yeah. I'm so busy, and I'm not even watching TV at all. And it's kind of hard to catch the recaps, you know what I mean? Because they don't really have it on online available all the time. But I do need to catch up. So
hey, there are worse
questions come like this, I have something to talk about.
There are worse problems to have than to be so busy as an actress that you can't catch up on television. Isn't
exactly.
that a nice problem to have these days?
Right. I mean, yeah, it's not a bad problem. But I definitely want to keep, you know, I want to keep up on what's going on, you know, because people do want to know what my take on things are. So I definitely want to stay in the loop. So it's unfortunate that I wasn't able to do it this season. So hopefully next season I will.
And you came from a very significant year in Idol when it was Jennifer Hudson and yourself, if I'm not mistaken, and a great group of ladies there. And, you know, we must say it's a platform that gave you something else significant here in your life, and we're talking to you today about a whole other level of what you do as a performer and do so very well. So Again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, LaToya.
Okay.
We look forward to catching the show.
Awesome.
Bye now.
See you there.
Bless you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
What a sweetheart she was.
Indeed.
And also, Don, thank you so much for being so understanding
Sort
of...
I want to go see her show.
Yeah. She makes it sound like, you know, it is unusual. You think about that show, but at the same time, even though it is grand, you know, the Broadway production is very grand, when I think about the film, what do I think about? I think about the intimate moments between the individual characters, so you could see that playing beautifully, even with song.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. No, I definitely want to run over there and see it.
But speaking about wanting to run over to things, I want to start in with Don and ask it. Don, can Slow Dance in Midtown, I read the credits of the woman who wrote and directed this thing, and she is just a television stalwart.
She's a powerhouse.
She's done everything. But I always like to ask the guest if they could, can you give us sort of a synopsis without giving too much away about what Slow Dance in Midtown is about and your role in it?
Well, did you read the little thing that she wrote? And I'll start with that.
Okay.
She's such an incredible writer. Obviously, you know, my jaw dropped when my friend sent me the script and asked me if I'd just come do the table read. I was just filling in for her friend who she had for the lead.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah. And of course, I had a little chip on my shoulder. Here I go again, you know, second banana, you know. So I went in and I just lit the room up. And on the way home, my friend called and said, dude, I don't know what you did, but she's firing her friend and she wants you for the lead role. So, and then when I Googled her and saw her credits on IMDb, that she's, you know, the executive producer and writer on little shows like Lost, Deadwood,
Alcatraz.
She created Alcatraz. I was beside myself. So, she writes that someone once said, "It's not how two souls come together, but how they move apart that proves their kinship." So in this play. Captures that moment in time. So, but I can tell you that I'm a cop, and there's the criminal underworld, and I was raised as a foster child by this mob family, and I'm playing a very intense, volatile man who happens to have
such a deep goodness,
but there's a goodness in him, and this is why I appreciate her bringing me on board to play this character, because it's one of the most complex and amazing characters I've ever been offered to play.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's four people in the cast.
There are four,
right?
And there's two. You would think it's two one acts, but then in the second act you realize that they interconnect.
Right.
And then there's a final little tag scene at the end that brings it all together. So
initially it looks like they're two self-contained pieces, and you don't really realize how they tie in.
Exactly.
And then as press notes say, it is, simply put, it's about people who love each other so desperately that they can't stand the sight of one another.
Exactly. Exactly. That, and you left out the expletive that
I did, indeed.
Yeah, the darn sight of each other.
Michael was trying not to say fucking. That's basically what it was.
You guys have a beep button.
It's the internet. So we don't have FCC regulations.
Okay.
So we don't encourage it, but
I discourage it.
I let it slip a lot more.
I'm struggling with my deep loyalty to my family, that my staying away from my mob family is my act of loyalty.
Okay.
And then Elizabeth Sarnoff wrote this.
Yes.
Just after her mother had passed away.
Wow.
And she was never a writer. This is the first thing she ever wrote. Then when David Milch read this very play, she credits this play for every job she's had since then, because he brought her under his wing. And
David Milch of Deadwood. Yeah.
Everything she's written since started with this play. And she wrote it as a sort of a therapeutic device, and she never meant for it to be produced. And now,
when did she write? How long?
She wrote it in 1998. The first person she ever let read it was 2000.
Oh wow!
And now that she's directing this, it came into my lap just after losing my brother, part of the theme. I don't want to spill too much, but it does involve losing someone to cancer.
Okay.
And so it's kind of the theme, underlying theme of this piece, and it came in my lap at an interesting time. And
well, without prying too much, Don, and because it's a real personal matter, but how much of that of the experience you had losing your brother, even at that early stage, how much did that inform what you were doing, like even at the table read? So did you feel it then?
It caught me by surprise, because I didn't have enough of a chance to really, I just thumbed through the script, and then it hit me in the table read.
Oh, wow.
And I channeled, I mean, it was just, you know, it was, it, first of all, it's an intense, volatile character who has a heart. And it's not too far off my casting. But with the cancer element hit me, and I just channeled this character that I think it's the best thing that I've ever done. And I just, I love Elizabeth Sarnoff for bringing this into my life. It's just...
Well, and it sounds like she's very lucky that I mean obviously kudos to her, but it sounds also like she got very lucky as well getting
you
on board.
Well, thank you for saying that. You read the email she sent me last night. I think that I would have to say she agrees that she found the right, you know, the right Frank. I'm the character Frank.
So. Okay,
that's
okay.
Awesome when something feels like that for yourself and also for the playwright. You know, it's a very special.
It is. I couldn't ask for a better situation.
And the other thing too, we're talking about intimate theater. We're talking about the experience for theater goers to go to a venue and really feel part of it. And for those of us that have performed at the White Fire, and Don and I were talking about this beforehand, it's a wonderful place to see theater because the audience is raked so severely that I don't think there's a seat that's more than 30 feet from the stage.
It's not. I mean, they cram almost 99 seats in this small space that is only about 30 feet deep.
And you're looking down the playing area. I like when you have small theaters and the playing area is what you would have for a larger venue. It's almost like you're on fair exchange with audience
and we've spared no expense. Our set was built by Warner Brothers. Wow. We've had an award-winning composer do original score. Our lighting technician from New York is an award-winning, Tony Award-winning lighting technician.
So, oh, yeah, Cricket.
We had nothing but the best coming for this.
Awesome. Yeah, so. Do I have that right? Is it Cricket on that, or is it Cricket on Color Purple? Which one is Cricket doing? Cricket Myers.
It would help if I knew the names.
I don't,
start bragging
because
about people.
Cricket Myers has done Seaglass shows for us.
I don't think Cricket did our show. Ours was a Jeremy.
Okay, then I'm confused. Somebody. I had Cricket for... for
well,
Color Purple.
Nice to know that we all are supported.
But you have a good one as well.
Yes, we did.
So no, I just love. Have you? You've seen a number of things at the White Fire.
Yes. I mean, I'm always surprised at what they can get on that stage. Actually, they really are able to work it. You know?
It's a very unusual setup too with the booth, because the booth is actually never worked in a theater where the booth is actually off the dressing room
and behind a curtain and behind the set, and so that they have video cameras looking at the stage, and he's actually watching it on a TV monitor.
Yeah,
the goings on the stage.
And it's just that the booth guy is right there with you, that you can actually, you know, if you wanted to. When you're backstage, if you just wanted to go into the booth, it's literally like opening a closet door.
Absolutely. Right, you could hang out with your stage manager and watch the show on TV.
On TV, yeah.
I have a question for you. Now, you're presently still working on the soaps, are you?
No. It looks that way on my resume, because if you look on IMDb, it says from 1983 to present. My very first job ever in Hollywood was on Days of Our Lives. Uh-huh. And then that's been my most recent soap job was on Days of Our Lives. So they clustered all together on IMDb. So I played a completely different character in 13 episodes in 1983,
right,
as I did on 5 episodes a few months ago.
Okay. Yeah.
And how was it to return?
It was interesting. Time. Of course, I didn't recognize anybody. I mean, when I did it, McDonald Carey,
yes,
had the voice like sands through the hourglass.
Exactly.
So are the days of our life. Yeah, I menaced the entire show, raped his little daughter, and then a few months ago I come back on as
just a few typical things.
I raped the sweetheart of the show. it was kind of nice going back, because if you heard, I mean, soaps are kind of a dying art.
Yes, they are.
It was nice to be able to go.
But you said something right there, which is what I wanted I was leading to, is that it is an art, and it is difficult to do.
Oh,
it's not easy for anybody to do.
Oh, are you kidding me? I had an 8 o'clock makeup call, 9 o'clock shoot call, and I was doing six scenes, about 12 or 13 pages of dialogue, but I was home pulling in my driveway at 11:30 in the morning, 2.5 hours later. Now, but what happens in that hour and a half is it's just cramped. I mean, they go ahead and shoot the rehearsal, and unless you mess up really bad, they move on. And I'm like, please, can I get one more take? You have to stand up for yourself. They, and of course, that's why it's all, what they say is it's all done in casting. We got to cast it right the first time because they don't have time for rehearsals and foolishness or people who drop their lines. So, and to, if you've ever done four camera video, it's you know, it's an art in itself. There's tape marks all over the floor. There's, you know, if I'm color blue, then I've got a blue one, a blue two, a blue three, a blue four, a blue five, and I have to say one and two lines on standing on the number one mark, and then I have to have the presence of mind to move to my number two mark to say my third and fourth line, and so on and so on. So you're cognizant of where you're standing, because they've already preset the light for that one spot.
Right.
If I'm making any sense to...
Oh, no, very much so.
It's very detailed.
I'm always curious, too, about that, because I've always prided myself on memory and being able to learn roles quickly.
But then I
find out that these people who do soaps, it's like you can't compare. The muscle that of their memory that they developed is just... Did you find that to be the case?
I found it to be the case. I found that I have a natural knack for it, which helped.
Right.
If people saw how difficult it is to pull off a performance on a soap setting, you'd really appreciate and forgive what some people think is maybe, you know, sometimes there's some things about soaps that they don't think is as carved out as you might find on a primetime TV show. I think it's to the credit of these amazing soap actors that they can do it at all.
How many shows do they? For our audience sake, how many shows are being shot?
They do an entire episode in one day.
In an eight-hour day. 5 days a week.
5 days a week.
Yeah. They would have to.
My friend Christine Tucci, who I went to college with.
Any relation to Stanley?
Stanley's younger sister, yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Christine Tucci, just a lovely, lovely woman I've known for years. And she, I believe she was on Another World. And she talked about how grueling it was. And I've always thought, David Sedaris, who I just love, I don't know if you follow David Sedaris at all on NPR, Amy Sedaris' brother, he's got all these great books, Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim and Naked and these great things. But he talks about, he's a huge soap opera fan, and he talks about when Santa Barbara came out, the Santa Barbara that was shot here, he goes, that wasn't a soap opera, because they went outside. And they went outside and they were on real beaches. He goes, when you want a soap opera, when they're on that beach, you want to hear the wooden floor underneath the fake, you know, beach carpet or whatever.
And I agree.
Because I tell you, there are no more maniacal fans than soap opera fans. Devoted.
When I did Days of Our Lives in 83, of course, like you said, it was shot indoors and I was Rip the biker. So when I came blasting my Harley up Main Street, it was actually a linoleum floor painted with concrete colored paint. And so when I hit the rear brake, because I was going to come in hot, and I power slid my bike sideways right up to my mark, a 4x8 section of the linoleum floor broke loose, and like me on the motorcycle on the linoleum piece, like Aladdin on a magic carpet, went sliding across stage 9 at Sunset Gower Studios, almost toward the camera crew.
Oh,
and they had to really glue that puppy down before I could do a take two.
Oh,
and
man.
Then,
so that was a dress rehearsal that didn't make the final cut.
That was one that didn't make the final cut. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
That is fun.
I'd be all
that
over
is
that.
Fun. Of all the things you've done in your career, film-wise, television-wise, in the theaters, anything that is particularly your favorite? Favorite project that you've ever done?
Oh, well, my first film, I was so lucky to be part of The Shy People with Barbara Hershey.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned so much. I mean, I spent 12 weeks with a dialect coach, and Andrei Konchalovsky came over from Russia to do it, and that was a blessing to be a part of that.
I loved that movie. We talked about it before. It's the first thing I said to him, Michael, in the lobby, was how much I enjoyed Shy People. It's very understated and very excellent.
Well, remember Gary Franklin did the reviewer. He's called it the most overlooked film of 1987. And, it was a wonderful project. Some of my best work that I've ever done is in a Western I did about a year ago, right after my brother passed away, called Heathens and Thieves, and it's about to hit the festival, so I've got my fingers crossed for that.
Exciting. That's exciting.
Thank you.
That's nice. He's done a couple of festival films as well.
Got a couple out there. Yeah, I want to talk about that, and I want to also talk about your teaching and the dabblings in comedy here, because I think that's really interesting. But we should do our arts calendar
first,
Michael.
Yes, sir.
You mind if I kick it off?
Please do.
All right. Two towering figures with spirits as expansive as planets are caught in each other's orbit, unable to break away from an irresistible yet deadly embrace. As the tectonic plates of world politics shift and forces align, determined to destroy them. Legendary lovers Antony and Cleopatra refuse to surrender an unquenchable lust for life in William Shakespeare's breathless tragedy, Antony and Cleopatra. Playing at a Noise Within through May 13th in their new space, which I've just heard wonderful things about.
Nice. Yes. The New American Theater, formerly Circus Theatricals, presents the world premiere play Bedfellows by Chuck Rose. Future California Governor Sanford Mitchell is the golden boy, a former star quarterback, a rising political star. But on the eve of his surefire election, an old damaging secret is uncovered which could destroy his career and dash the hopes of millions of people who believed in him. Bedfellows opens this Saturday at the McCadden Place Theater and plays through June 2nd.
And for further information about any productions and or events mentioned in today's State of the Arts live calendar, visit us at stateoftheartsla.com. And we should also point out that we're on facebook.com/stateoftheartsla because we've got a lot of traffic to the Facebook page. So
nice,
a lot of people
good.
There. So facebook.com/stateoftheartsla. We also suggest you drop in at performingartslive.com where you can search for Southern California events in several different categories happening every day of the week.
Yes.
They do good work.
They do
Performing Arts
work.
Live.
So let's
great
get
stuff.
Back to Mr. Swayze here. A man of many talents. Not only is he a fine actor and on the stage currently in Los Angeles here, ladies and gentlemen, but he's got a very daring kind of side to him. We were talking before we went on the air, and he's got some interests in skydiving. Which you said you were schooled for, of course.
Absolutely. I've got almost 3,500 jumps, so, and I have the master license.
3,500 jumps.
Yes.
Now, the first time you did you do it solo or did you do the tandem?
No, side? I didn't. I had the option of doing the tandem, but, you know, there was two people with two parachutes, and I thought, well, in the doing the solo, it's one person, two parachutes. I just like the math better. And of course, you know, you learn that
I'm just saying.
Yes. I'm no math whiz, but the tandem, you're at the drop zone for about 20 minutes and you're already on the plane. But the other course, you actually sit in a classroom for 6 hours, which either I was just buying myself time, stalling, if you will, or I really wanted to learn what I was doing. If I was going to do this at all, I wanted to understand it. And sure enough, going through that course, you learn quite simply that, you know, if A and B doesn't work, I have C, D, E, and A. You know, there are things that you can do.
Right.
And it made it a lot, it helped it make more sense to me. But I only went to do one jump, thinking that would be enough. I didn't realize it was such a following, and there was a wonderful sport. So,
anyway. Well, you must.
I'm sorry. We have a call in. I want to see. Oh. Let's just answer it and see who's
for the
calling
heck of
in.
It,
yeah,
huh?
Someone may
all
be
right.
calling in. This is State of the Arts. Who are we speaking to?
Hi, this is Sarah. I was wondering, is Max there?
I'm sorry.
Is Max in?
No, he's not. This is actually a live internet radio show that you've called into, but thanks for trying.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thanks.
It's okay.
It's
bye
okay.
Now. There's no Max.
All right, we're looking for Max.
I don't know. It's just flashing.
Max, call Sarah.
Normally, I wouldn't have taken the call, but
thank you, Doc.
Did you know that you were going to be coming on to give messages?
No,
normally, I wouldn't take it, you know, but I saw the number kept coming up and coming up and coming up, and I said, this is a person who really wants to speak to us.
Obviously,
normally, we don't take the interruptions.
In a big way.
So now, let me ask you, because we talked about safety earlier, and we were talking about the skydiving. Any close calls?
I've had a few close calls. Yeah, I was actually in a bad accident, but it was involved base jumping. You ever heard of the duck side?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm one of the guys that started this crazy sport. And I was taught by the guys who started it, and I was what you might call the second generation. And I did the building jumps for the film Drop Zone, and I choreographed some stunts in the mid '90s that made one of which made it on a show called Hollywood's Greatest Stunts. It's pretty rare for an actor to actually have a side job choreographing aerial stunts for film.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, I had the film background, and I was an avid skydiver, and put the two together, and I was a perfect choice. But and base jumping, I had a bad accident in 1995 where I actually was on crutches for about 2 years.
Wow, really?
So now skydiving, which is relatively safer, just scares me just fine. So I don't feel the need to go out and.
And does it scare you?
It does. And
so
I would
that moment that you are getting ready to jump.
My heart's beating so fast I can see it visibly moving, vibrating my jersey. I'd be crazy if it didn't scare me, but it translates to more like a, you know, it's a high adrenaline feeling that, and makes me
want, it's a focus.
Yes,
a,
and, I, yeah, and I'm yeah. very conscious of my equipment, and we're very careful to give each other what we call pin checks. You check my pin, I check yours. That's a mandatory thing in the plane just before leaving. So if you saw the look of fear in everybody's eyes, you'd know that it's very important to us to be safe. It's right. not just a Russian roulette type.
Well,
sport.
It's one of those things. It's sort of like going out on stage when it's not
yeah,
like that. But
yeah.
it's sort of like that. The whole nerves just serve to focus you more. Right. You know, it's mm-hmm. the idea is controlling it. I ride a motorcycle, and I can't meditate. I can't do those things to really sort of clear my head. The only thing I can do is I can displace my thoughts with something else.
Right.
And that's why I find motorcycling so much like meditation, because you have to focus. You have to have this tremendous Zen-like focus if you're going to stay alive.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And I imagine it's very, very similar
There's
to that.
There's a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
And do
yep.
you, is there some sort of required policy connected to the sport that you have to keep yourself in, well, I'm sure you have to keep yourself in physical good health at all times, but to be checked periodically before you go up and before you take a job?
For us personally, well, our equipment does for sure.
Yeah.
My parachute gets, my reserve gets taken apart, inspected, and repacked every 120 days, whether it's been used or not. And a government-trained rigger has that job. Mm-hmm. And so it's not even my control. And
now that's the reserve, you said?
That's the reserve parachute. And there's a seal on it that the rigger must clamp on the seal, that if that's ever broken, and it's checked before every time we get on the plane. If the seal's broken, they won't let you get on the plane. So it's
okay.
nice to know that the United States Parachute Association and the FAA has rules forcing us to keep our reserves packed and our equipment inspected. Now, us personally, I think it's probably more on visual inspection, mm-hmm. and we all have to police each other on that.
Right.
There's no drinking. No one's allowed. You know, you're not even allowed to set foot through the gate over in the bomb shelter bar area where I skydive at Paris Valley
mm-hmm.
until what they call green light. At the end of the day, when the last plane is taken off, and there's no chance on anybody getting on the plane that's mm-hmm. ever had any alcohol. So we all police it. Ourselves in that sense.
And packing your parachute that's your job.
Yeah, my main parachute I pack in about 6 minutes.
Okay.
And 3,420 something jumps. I've only seen my reserve once. So you can say it's relatively a safe bet that a parachute will open if you don't do anything too crazy when you're packing it.
Mm-hmm.
Now the reserve is laid down and it's almost ironed and cared for and,
right.
and
well,
laid in the pack.
Because that is
life.
The most important piece of
yeah.
equipment you have.
And my rigger who packs my reserve is my favorite person on the planet, who gets a hug and a bottle of whatever he wants or anything. For, you know, so.
Oh, that's I really maybe that's my 50th. Maybe that's my
wow.
50th thing to do.
Well,
yeah.
Go up with John.
Yeah, no. I just
show
you
the best.
Way.
Jim Wallace
out
at the Paris Valley is undoubtedly one of the most experienced jump masters in the world, and we happen to have him here in L.A. So.
And where is that place? So
Paris Valley is between here and San Diego. If there was a triangular...
You don't happen to know a web address or anything, do you?
ParisValleySkydiving.com, I'm sure.
Okay. All right. Well, tell us.
JimWallaceSkydivingSchool.com.
Okay,
sure
there you go.
Sure
so before we forget, while we're giving information out, Wes,
yeah.
we talked to Don about his show, but I don't think we gave the stats on how people
need
tickets.
Oh, I would be remiss if I...
So I will do that.
Because we're going up for the next 6 weeks.
Okay, yeah. This is at the White Fire Theater, which is 13500 Ventura Boulevard in Sherman Oaks. And performances are Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 8. And tickets are available... Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 8. There's no Sunday show.
No Sunday
okay.
show.
Okay. And tickets are available online at Brown Paper Tickets or by visiting www.slowdanceinmidtown.com or by calling 818-990-2324. That email address or that URL again is slowdanceinmidtown.com. Easy to remember. Same name as the show.
Same name of the show.
Same name of the show, Paul. So occasionally the New York slips out a little bit. Did you take care of that thing for me? Did you
yeah.
take care of that thing for
yeah,
me?
I did.
Okay, beautiful. We'll go where we
you.
Went that time with the guy.
I'm so fascinated by that conversation. you know, the skydiving.
Skydiving?
That works.
Yeah, something like that.
I wanted to ask you, too, because you said, you know, you came in and you're still just so physically fit and so ripped and everything. There's obviously, there doesn't seem to be any negative repercussion from your accident.
Well, thank you. I hide that well. I've got, I found myself in 72 pieces that one night at 3 o'clock in the morning by myself.
Wow.
I went through a horrific experience with my rehabilitation, and you know, I came from a dance family, and you have muscle memory, and I actually had other people with bad orthopedic trauma ask how it is I walk so well, and I just simply say it's in your mind, you know. Once I got sick of limping after about 2 or 3 years, and I closed my eyes and I visualized Don Swayze walking the way I used to walk, and I imagine I used to have a cat-like gait, and I imagined it, and I started walking across my living room, and when I opened my eyes, I wasn't limping anymore. And it pisses people off when I say that, but it's a fact.
That's astounding.
It is.
But thank you. And
mind over matter.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
And I train very hard. I'm an avid cyclist, and I credit that for giving me strength in my legs back.
You mentioned that earlier, and I meant to comment about that when I asked you about mountain bikes, because I used to represent for about 4 years Lance Armstrong.
I'll be darned.
Prior, when Lance had cancer, and nobody wanted him anymore. Through that whole time period, I was working with him, and then once he conquered the cancer and got back on the team, and it was a very hard comeback for him, you know, initially.
Absolutely, and I followed it, you know.
And
was,
to have
hero.
The privilege
of
representing him through the first.
Well,
win.
Good for you for believing in him.
It
says a lot about you. That's nice.
It was very exciting, and I did get a mountain bike out.
Yeah, you
exactly
did.
Exactly the
oh,
one that Mr. Armstrong
I'm sure
wrote.
He styled you and got you.
Imagine what you would have gotten if you represented Neil Armstrong.
That's right. The face of the moon, perhaps, you know. So we have to baptize Don now.
Yes, we do.
You know, it's come to that time of the
year. At the last 5 minutes of our show, Don, as Michael said, we always like to ask people about some unusual thing, some mishap, some madness, some performance-related thing that they could share that they sort of look back, you know, maybe comically now, or it's funnier now.
I got a couple of them. That's great. I love that.
So do you have a tale or two you could share with us?
Well,
I got last
one. I don't know how funny everyone's going to think it is. Maybe the guy is think it's not funny. I was playing I'm the biker gang leader, and we pull up, and I'm at the point on my Harley, and as menacing as I can be with all my, you know, leather regalia, and then the cyborg killer is facing off at us, and we can't get, you know, we can't penetrate his armor, and he pulls out his cyborg gun and shoots us, and the director said, okay, Don, at this point, forget about the motorcycle, let it drop and dive off into the bush, dive off into the bushes. Great. I was excited that I wasn't being doubled, and they're setting up those squib shots so that the ground explodes with all the bullet hits. And I see a great bush over there. I'm going to dive in. I'm going to show them all how it's done. Face first into this bush. What no one told me is it wasn't a real bush. It was a 2x4 that the art department had hammered into the ground. And they'd come up and just lain the tree branches up against us to make it look like a bush. So when I dove into the bush, and I ended up with 8 stitches on my forehead. And
oh
they had to stop,
God.
And they had to cover it with the new skin. And they'd get me stitches and so that's one little story. Another one was shooting VIP with Pamela Anderson, and I'm the bad guy, but it's a scene where I'm in disguise, and in the crowded subway scene, I brush up against her. I'm supposed to brush up against her.
Right.
She never knows that the killer was that close to her.
Right.
But Pamela Anderson's real-life bodyguard, who is on the set every day, hanging around like a big, you know, thug, not getting enough attention, comes up to me between takes and says, hey, tell me that was an accident. And I'm like, excuse me? Sorry? He says, you tell me, actor, you tell me whether that was an accident or not. And I'm looking around like, help? This guy's like 6'8". And finally, I just blurted out, somebody, who the hell is this guy over here getting in my face when I'm an actor, you know, playing a part? You know, what the hell? Somebody tell this guy it's make-believe. You know, so.
Oh, man. That's like I got the gun pulled on me when I was doing Tony and Tina's Wedding.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we were doing Tony and Tina's Wedding in Chicago, and there's a scene where we go out onto the out of the Vinnie Black's Coliseum restaurant. I was the caterer, Vinnie Black, and we just basically this guy gets beat up, but it's all choreographed and the door is shut and everything. And we're outside and we're doing all this fake sort of fighting, and we turn around and we're all staring right down the barrel of a gun, And it's a off-duty Chicago cop who was convinced we were actually beating up this guy.
Oh, no.
And I tell you, you never saw four actors playing thugs go pansy faster in your life.
You dropped characters.
They were
so
just
fast.
Like, no, it's okay. We'll take care of it. I turned around, see the guy. It's a play. It's a play. It's just a play. Just like, could not have given it up.
You actors.
Okay, Ethel Merman. Ethel Merman. We were prancing Ethel Merman.
Ladies funny. And gentlemen, to see Don Swayze on stage live here in Los
Please
Angeles.
Come.
Slow dance in Midtown at the White Fire Theater on Ventura Boulevard in Sherman Oaks. That's 13500 Ventura Boulevard in Sherman Oaks. Performances are Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays at 8 p.m. Ticket price is a mere $20. You cannot beat that. Go out, support the theater.
Yes.
See it live. They are available at Brown Paper Tickets or by calling, or by visiting www.slowdanceinmidtown.com or simply calling 818-990-2324.
Thank you.
And, Don, pleasure having you on the air.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. What a pleasure. Come back anytime. We're going to get out and see your show.
Oh, great. I'd love to have you there.
And playing us off the air, we got a little Easter treat here, Michael. We have a little Easter treat. This is I've always struggled about how to balance my spiritual Easter, meaning, you know,
yes,
the whole God thing.
Of course.
With the commercial Easter, which is the Easter Bunny and candy and all that.
Yes.
And I think it was done very well by Tom Waits with the song Chocolate Jesus.
Pleasure being with you this week, Paul.
This is Beth Hart and Joe Bonamassa doing their cover of this wonderful song Chocolate Jesus to play us off the air.
Nice.
So here we go.
Church on Sunday, don't get on my knees to pray. Memorize the books of the Bible, I got my own special way. I know Jesus, he loved me, maybe just a little bit more. If I fall down on my knees every Sunday at the Revelous Candy Store, well, it's got to be Chocolate Jesus. Made me feel so good inside. Got to be a chocolate Jesus to keep me satisfied.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.